Right to it today. A wise man thinks long and hard before accepting a hungry cannibal's offer of oral sex. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is Use All the Crayons, the podcast with no discernible format or purpose, neither of which is good enough reason to give up. After all, it's working out pretty good for the Kardashians. Today we're going to try a new format. It's just me reading some of my favorite posts and colorful living tips. Something to make you smile and restore some order to your life before you tap into the next true crime podcast. One of the most challenging aspects of fatherhood for me has been, with a straight face, extol the twin virtues of chastity and sobriety without ever once acknowledging some of the best times I've had on the planet involve getting drunk and making out with total strangers. This was from 2022. I've said before that a father teaching a daughter to drive is like a warden teaching an inmate how to escape. So as of yesterday, it was one Adam 12, we have an APB for a female 16-year-old known to come to a complete stop, even at desolate intersections. Suspect exhibits pathological disdain for having to parallel park. That comes from me. Here's the sum of my parallel parking instructions. Accelerate past the vacancy to reduce the temptation to parallel park. Drive in a relaxed fashion until you find a spacious surface lot with three adjoining spaces. Park in the middle one. Summon Uber and pay $5 or so to drop you off at the front door of your destination. That was the second time taking the test. This was her second time taking the test. I told her, lied, 72% of test takers who fail do so because of the parallel parking failure. Just like you. Citing the made-up statistic did nothing to ease her despondency. I needed to say something wise and insightful. Here, after hours of deliberation, is what I came up with. You'll get 'em next time, kiddo. That's it. It was like she was four and blew a chance to win a silly straw at an aisle six supermarket promotion. Happily, God is well aware of my many shortcomings. He, pronoun from biblical sources, sent me two examples of bestowed perspective and levity that helped deflate her tension. The first was a timely recollection of an Austin Powers clip of him trying to execute a three-point turn. It's absolutely hilarious. Check it out on YouTube. The second example caught me by surprise. He's not someone for whom I've had ever felt any affinity. He was a bad husband to one of my favorite Hollywood starlets, Jennifer Garner, and he's currently imposing his New England mopiness on another, Jennifer Lopez. Yes, it's Ben Affleck. I normally wouldn't pay any attention to Affleck news, but I was having a bad day, and the way small-minded men like me feel better about ourselves is reading about people we envy having days that suck. The headline is Another Rough Day for Ben Affleck by Daniel Cohen in New York Magazine. It's terrific. So what was the source of Affleck's angst? Did he and Garner have families to blend? Did J-Lo ask him to breakdance in her next video? No, the trouble was parallel parking. This is from Cohen's story. I don't know if you've ever tried to parallel park, but it is akin to entering this fifth circle of hell, with the sixth being doing it while people watch. This magazine's official stance on parallel parking? People should be allowed to grace to park alone without being perceived. So if it makes sense that Ben Affleck, who recently resumed his reign as the king of despair, was subjected to being not only watched, but also filmed while trying to work his way out of a parking crisis. On Monday, Affleck found himself in the nightmarish scenario of attempting to wiggle his Mercedes-Benz out of a parking spot in Brentwood. Affleck knows better than anyone that we live in a cruel, cruel world. So, of course, TMZ managed to secure footage of the entire ordeal. We can relate. I propose we alter the spelling of the hassle to better reflect all that could go wrong in attempting it. It's parallel-less parking. Perilous parking. Exploding toilets may cause plumbers' lives to flush before their eyes. Has this ever happened to you? Someone tells you they write books and you're not sure how to react. Here's a tip. Be afraid, very afraid. You've just met a person of ruthless determination. That person stares down one blank page and vows, I'm going to fill this vast emptiness with so much compelling and original thought that readers I've never met will not only absorb every word, but they'll greedily want to devour every single page that follows. He or she will repeat this process until he or she has vanquished the next 350 pages. Don't be fooled by the writer's benign appearance. The writer is a mass murderer. He or she has silenced all the voices that nag, "You're wasting your time. Your ideas suck. Why don't you get a real job?" And these are just the voices the writer hears inside his or her own head. The writer is relentless. Once he or she vows to finish a book, the grim single-mindedness takes over, and the writer becomes impervious to distractions he or she mocks as frivolous. These frivolous duties may include things like childcare, residential upkeep, and the relationships others consider so vital to mental well-being. The writer is messianic. He or she believes God ordains that the book must be written because its publication will lead to justice, understanding, social equality, and perhaps MLB playoff games that conclude before midnight. So show a little respect next time some stranger says he or she writes books. Hell, there are things those writers could teach the aspirants to SEAL Team 6. Question. If a diplomatic rooster tries to avert a cockfight, is it fair to call him chicken? Speculation, pure speculation here, but what if Jesus returns today at 3 p.m.? I'm hoping he does, and I hope he decides to materialize right here in my office. Why here? I suspect the Lord is going to need a stiff drink or two, and the Tin Lizzie is a great place to initiate some introductory philosophizing. And 3 p.m. would be good because it would allow me to maybe bang out a tweet or two before I blew off the rest of the day advising the King of Kings about the number of challenges to save a world that looks increasingly God-forsaken. First of all, I'll say, we need to hustle out to the Ukraine and end the war that is devastating Eastern Europe. Then there's bitter divisions here in the USA, mostly goaded by mostly old white men who fancy they're you. Then there's climate change, the disappearance of species who've thrived since Noah. And yeah, we'd all like to know where you come down on that whole Will Smith, Chris Rock thing. Understand we're talking about the second coming here, happening today, in my office. I wonder if he'll buy books. I wonder if he'll carry cash, or I'll have to let him explain crypto to me. I wonder how he'll go about fulfilling the scripture so long foretold. Much of the Bible can be wildly contradictory on what happens during JC version 2.0. It says he will cleanse the world. Would it be possible for him to warm up by cleansing my office? It says he will usher in a 1,000-year period where he will rule the earth. That sounds good, but half America will be pissed if he doesn't be too cozy by watching one of the other partisan networks. At the risk of being labeled a hellbound false prophet, that is not biblical. That is Bob Dylan. I try and slip some enigmatic Dylan lyrics in whenever I quote the Bible in the hopes a theologian will explain them to me. What can I say? Some people seek the meaning of life. I seek the meaning of Bob Dylan. One of the big things about the second coming, according to believers, is Jesus will separate the believers from the unjust and zip, send the unworthy all straight to hell. War, want, injustice, addiction, hatred, loneliness. If he does come by my office at 3 p.m. today, I'm going to gently recommend he take a forgiving posture on all who seem deserving of a soulful dispatch to hell. It looks to me like too many of us are already there. Most medical professionals take great pains to ensure their offices are pristine, orderly, overly neat, but it takes a proctologist to be truly anal. When cave women told cave men they were pregnant and were going to have a cave baby, did they direct them to take a wild guess or to wait for more definitive testing before deciding to paint the cave pink or blue? Val and I did something in the bedroom we've, even after 30 years of sleeping together, had never dreamed we'd try. It was for us a little deviant, a little kinky. It was, and there is no way to avoid this, good and hard. I'd better explain before any of you daintier readers become faint at the body turn this blog seems to have taken. We'd purchased a new mattress. In more than 30 years of togetherness, we purchased our first non-waterbed mattress. See, Val and I are both waterbed enthusiasts long before we met. This put us at odds with 97% of Americans who sleep. I qualify the figure because I'm convinced about 10% of all Americans do not sleep even a wink, ever. I presume the 10% spend their waking moment thinking up ways to say on, think up things on to say on Facebook to make it uncomfortable for those of us who check out Facebook just to make sure our old friends remain in a state of spastic euphoria over things like Taco Tuesday. At their popularity's peak in 1984, waterbeds were a $2 billion a year industry, accounting for 22% of all mattress sales. In the free-love 70s, they were hippie staples. I bought my first waterbed in 1985. I was shopping to fill my very first apartment. This was in Nashville, and I was filling it with cheap furniture. I remember the salesman who looked like he looked like either Starsky or Hutch. I can no longer recall which is which. But I still remember his sales pitch. "There are two things that are better in a waterbed," he said. "One of them is sleep." "Sold!" Give me a break. I was young and new to the city and open-minded about any suggestion that might increase the chances of me getting laid. Who could have predicted my stumbling virtue would remain intact, clear up to that magical night in 1996, when my wife said, "I do." And she did. Still does. Am I going to miss the waterbed? At its best, climbing into waterbed on a cold winter night was like returning to the womb. That is, if the womb in which you were conceived was about the same capacity as a 4-ton female pachyderm's. I think I'm going to miss saying I owned a waterbed more than actually owning one. And I'm a little sad to say goodbye to another one of the things that made the hippie era so sweet. Makes me feel like a relic. To think I once had a lava light, bell-bottom jeans, beaded doorways, shoulder-holstered wineskins filled to bursting with Mogan David. When I think about it, I'm pretty lucky Val stuck with me, and I'm grateful that things we share are deeper than an old waterbed mattress. I got you, babe. Tell friends you're going to open an art gallery. Invite them to a room with nothing on the walls. Have them be greeted by 30 guys who say nothing but, "Hi, I'm Art." Colorful Living Tip of the Day, number 1001. Learn the fine art of knowing precisely when to quit. Thank you.